This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The headlines are almost surreal. Deadly cartoon riot near U.S. base, says one, but the news itself is not funny. Afghan police firing into a mob of protesters trying to storm a U.S. military base today in fury over cartoon caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad published in a Danish newspaper. There have been riots and death and burning embassies across the Muslim world. The Danish paper says it was standing up for free speech. Angry Muslims say it's blasphemy. Cool heads call for calm, but with U.S. troops patrolling by mosques and extremists eager for a showdown, there is a dangerous whiff of religious war in the air. Up next on Point, cartoons and a deadly serious culture clash. Joining me now from Brussels in Belgium for the latest reaction in Europe to the growing outcry over the cartoons is David Rennie, European correspondent for the Daily Telegraph. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello.
How is this playing out in Europe? Have the Danes backed down? Are the apologies piling on? Are people sticking to their guns on publishing this? How's it unfolding?
Well, there's a sense that it's rising to another level of kind of geopolitics. We've had some very interesting comments today from the German government, very, very harsh on what's happening in Iran, saying that the behavior of the Iranian government seems designed to escalate and to internationalize this crisis, and in particular to try and drag Israel and the whole question of anti-Semitism in the Middle East into this. We had the largest Iranian newspaper launching a competition, a worldwide competition for cartoons which ridicule and deny the Holocaust. This was very harshly criticized today by very senior people in the German government, saying that Iran was essentially trying to distract attention from the whole row over its nuclear activities, a row which, of course, involves Europe just as much as the United States.
So rising to a new level of global almost crisis. Take us back to how this began. It was in September that these cartoons ran. Why did they run in the first place, and why did it take so long for this to become such a big issue?
Well, basically, the short story is that in September, the largest Danish newspaper, Jyllands-Posten, their culture and books section decided to run 12 cartoons that they had commissioned from regular cartoons of theirs depicting the Prophet Muhammad. The reason for this was that a Danish children's book author had been writing a book about Islam, a positive children's book about Islam, had found that no one was willing to draw the Prophet Muhammad for him.
Kind of a contradiction in terms of positive book on Islam with drawings of Muhammad. I mean, Muslims don't draw Muhammad.
I think it was for non-Muslim children. It was part of a series of books on world religion.
Yeah.
And he found it upsetting that no one was prepared to draw the Prophet Muhammad. This was then raised by the newspaper as a kind of talking point. And it caused some demonstrations in Copenhagen. I mean, 5,000 Muslims turned out pretty quickly. There was then a fairly concerted campaign inside Denmark by Danish imams and Danish Muslim activists to try and get an apology from the newspaper and an apology from the government, and also to get the Prime Minister of Denmark, Anders Fogh Rasmussen, to meet a group of Arab and Muslim ambassadors and discuss the issue with them. Now, Mr. Rasmussen said that he saw no reason why he should meet these ambassadors because in his country,
the Prime Minister
does not control the press.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this rumbled along. We had various statements issued at meetings of things like the Organization of the Islamic Conference, a 56-nation Islamic group, held an annual summit. This came up there. We had various comments from various ministers, but until the new year, this was still not really a major issue. What my best information, after talking to the Danish imams, after talking to a lot of people, is that the key to this was a group of Danish imams took themselves off in December, more or less in frustration that they had not got enough of a reaction back home, and they went off and saw some very senior Islamic clerics in Cairo, like the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar, the Mufti of Egypt.
They took the cartoons with them. Somewhere along the line, even more got added, very obscene cartoons, bringing pigs and dogs in.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me. Just to say that they got even more profane somehow. The portfolio got bolstered with things that were not published.
You're right. They took a 43-page dossier with them, and this is a real point of contention in Denmark. The dossier began with the 12 cartoons published in the Danish newspaper, but it then also contained three other images, two of Muhammad, another obscene anti-Muslim image, And there is a real question mark about to what extent they made absolutely clear to the people they were seeing that these other images, much more obscene, had not in fact ever been published anywhere in the Danish media. Now, they have one version of the story, their critics have another version of the story, but there's no doubt that those are the images that have been causing some of the anger in the Muslim world.
David Rennie, where does this go now? You say it feels like it's ratcheting up to a new level. Do we have a crisis here, or is this just, what's going on?
Well, I think a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon. You have factions within the Palestinian territories, Hamas and Fatah, both vying to be the most vocal on this. You have the Iranians trying to sort of take leadership, I think, in the Muslim world on this. You have various Arab governments, which some of them very secular governments, like the Syrian government, protesting about this. And then the trade boycott is certainly hurting Danish business a very great deal at the moment. It's now a diplomatic question, I think, and a political question.
A diplomatic, political, and some would say culture. David Rennie in Brussels, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to turn to Beirut, Lebanon, and Rami Khoury. He's a syndicated columnist and editor-at-large for the Daily Star in Lebanon. Rami Khoury, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Rami, we've talked many times. You know the U.S. well. You're there in the heart of the Middle East right now. How do you interpret what's happened here? And with this ratcheting up, not down, how dangerous is this?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things is that most of these protests are directed against Europe. I mean, it's a kind of nice for a change not to see people attacking the U.S.
Except they were marching on U.S. military bases in Afghanistan today, so it's not entirely Europe alone.
Well, yes, but I think they're seen as NATO bases, I think. But the focus of the anger is directed against the Europeans. So it's quite a nice change, I suppose, for the Americans in the short run. What's really going on here is that in small incident, which is the cartoons in the Danish press, sparked or sort of triggered a much wider range of expressions of anger and frustration, which have to do with other issues. And the mechanism, what I think the Europeans don't understand, and Americans generally don't understand very well, is that the Islamic identity, the Islamic religion, is not just a question of personal faith. And it's not only the insult of the cartoons drawing the Prophet Muhammad and equating Islam and the Prophet with terrorism. The Islamic identity has become a kind of a proxy for a national identity in most of the Arab Islamic world. The countries, the governments are not doing very well. There's instability, there's corruption, there's autocracy. And people have turned to Islam, which is a normal thing to do. When people are in distress, they turn to the religions. And Islam is on a roll. The Islamist parties are winning every election that's been held in the last couple of years in the Arab Islamic countries. And not just the Arab world, Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, all over the place. So I think the Europeans generally are seen in the Arab and the Islamic world broadly as tilting now more towards the Israeli and the American positions on issues of Iranian nuclear industry, on issues of talking to Hamas, which won a democratic election, and on other issues. There is a sense that Europe is joining the American-Israeli camp, and the sense that Islam, generally Islamic societies, are threatened or are in danger. And this is something that comes clearly out of public opinion polling that has been done. So I think this is the wider context of what's going on.
Rami, you say today that it is a clash of cultures, but not just a clash of cultures. You call it a new form of the colonial struggle, but with the strong Islamic face on it, it can look like a religious struggle, even as though in the midst of all these conflicts, there's kind of a tilt toward, I mean, it sounds absurd, it sounds medieval, but religious war here.
Well, I wouldn't call it religious war. What I would call it is people using their religious identity as a form of resistance against what they see as a colonial foreign danger or threat to them. I mean, what you have here is the strongest force that has plagued the Arabs for the last 200 years, and the Arabs and other Muslims, the strongest force that has plagued them, which is Western colonial militarism and arrogance and political predatory policies, all these things that they fear from the West because of their experience.
But what about Europe saying, we feel threatened by Islamic dictates that are not our own, threats to our principles of freedom of the press, for example?
Well, freedom of the press in every country, especially where it has developed well over the last couple of hundred years, is balanced by certain responsibilities and basic human dignities and basic human decency. I mean, we're talking about insulting the prophet of a religion. How would people like it in the U.S. in a Baptist church in Texas if somebody came and drew Jesus Christ as a child molester because a couple of priests had molested children, or drew Mary as a madam in a whorehouse or something?
Rami Khoury, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm joined in the studio by Adil Najam. He's professor of international negotiation and diplomacy at the Fletcher School at Tufts University. Adil, thanks very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Pakistani by origin.
Pakistani by origin, Muslim by faith.
Muslim by faith. Let's just talk first about these cartoons. I've got them here in front of me. And by the way, there's huge controversy about where these get published, who publishes them, and who does not. You can see them on the web. It's the information age. If you go to newspaperindex.com, click on the blog in the right-hand corner, there's a link to the cartoons. Many American papers have not run them. NPR has not even a link. We're not doing it, not even a link. But it's out there. It's in the infosphere, and they're spread here on the table right before me. I'm sorry if they're offensive to you personally. What do you make of this?
I think your first speaker, David, was exactly right. This is going to a new level of geopolitics. This is very, very disturbing, and it's disturbing at every level. As a Muslim, I'm disturbed by all sorts of things. Let me start by sort of how I am disturbed by the violence. I am offended by the cartoons. I'm offended not simply that people don't understand that Muslims don't like the image of the Prophet to be depicted. Mm-hmm. That's not the key. The key is what's in the cartoon, and I'm offended by the fact that we don't talk about the substance. So, with due respect...
Well, let's talk about it for a second.
And if, right. I, if I just...
Yes,
might, one thing, but I'm also offended by the Muslim reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
So... My dignity.
The violence of the reaction.
The violence. The burning of the flag does not restore my dignity.
The Danish flag
burning
with
of
the cross
Danish
on
flags,
it.
The burning of the Danish flag with the cross on it, the burning of Danish consulates, that does not restore my dignity in any way. In fact, it somehow justifies the subject matter of the cartoons. And that's where I think the escalation is happening.
It's sort of cycle feeding on itself here.
I think what it does is that the worst caricature, to speak in cartoon language, that each side has of the other is being glorified. So the worst image the West has of the Muslims and the worst image that the Muslims have of the West is coming into focus here. And that's what's disturbing.
It feels incredibly dangerous. Then we had the State of the Union speech last week. President Bush saying right at the top of the speech, we're going after this
radical
terrorism, we're going after radical Islam. Now, Osama bin Laden represents that. We saw what happened on 9/11. But if you imagine reversing it, some Islamic state saying we're going after radical Christianity, just having the word Christianity in there might make a lot of Christians
it
uneasy.
It would. And I think sort of in a way, the fundamentalists on both sides have taken hold of the debate. In some ways, sort of on the Muslim side, sort of reducing this to just depicting the Prophet, which is nasty, but that's not why people are burning things. They're burning things because of what they see and hear is in the cartoon. On the other side, I think the West has also sort of fundamentalized it by saying, hey, this is just about freedom of speech. Freedom of speech ought to be respected and honored. But this is not about free speech. This is about hate speech.
So here's the Prophet Muhammad, and Islam doesn't do this. They do not represent Muhammad in illustration. Here he is.
In some variants they do. In Iran,
in some Shiite areas they do. But if you go to Islamic mosques, you won't even see humans represented in most of them. Go to the Taj Mahal, you won't see. You'll see flowers and vines. Here is Muhammad with the famous sort of old-fashioned bomb in the turban.
Right, and the turban is actually Indian rather than Arab if you actually look at the cartoon.
Right, it's sort of ornate. He's looking fierce, and it's the fuse is burning. It's right there. Here's another, real kind of ethnic send-up of a guy in robes and turban with a huge dagger before him, his eyes blacked out, veiled woman behind him. This is supposed to be the Prophet Muhammad. Another rather mild-mannered-looking Muhammad standing on a cloud as if in heaven, saying to smoking, kind of roasting fellows coming up through the clouds, stop, stop, we have run out of virgins. Mm-hmm. The Danish paper said this is in line with the Western tradition that we are free to criticize and offend. You're saying, no, this is what?
I think it's a violation not only of Islamic principles, it's a violation of Western traditions of tolerance. Take the cartoon, any of those cartoons. Mm-hmm. Imagine it's about African Americans. It will be a racist
You're saying
cartoon.
This is Black Sambo kind of stuff.
Imagine if it is about Jews, it would be anti-Semitic. If it were anti-Semitic, we should say it is so. If it is racist, we should say it is so. These are Islamophobic, and we should say it is so. The problem in some ways, you know, you talked about how it festered. Mm. There was a long moment when people like me thought maybe this would go a different direction. Mm. Maybe the Danish Prime Minister would meet the ambassadors
yeah.
and say, I stand for free speech, but I stand against hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to close down the newspaper.
Right.
All you say is, I don't stand with hate speech. Silence becomes endorsement.
But you know the sort of the theme this was brought up under was a shadow of Islam is falling across Europe. Europe can no longer be Europe because it feels constrained by dictates, by religious rules, not its own.
Right, but its own rules are we do not incite hate. That's the rule. So you can pick up from your own rules. Just like I think the Muslim world should pick up from its own rules that we do not do vengeance, which is, in fact, what this violence is.
And this would be right? a good time for that. But you're right. Germany doesn't run swastikas anymore. I want to begin to bring our listeners in. Alan is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Alan. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say, sir, your show is absolutely wonderful and very thought-provoking.
You're very kind.
Sir, first of all, if anything, these violent acts are absolutely reprehensible. They do not represent Islam in any sort of way. Now, having said that, if anything, if any one of these individuals who are out there violently burning flags or attacking people, kidnapping, doing things who are totally un-Islamic, if they will only follow what Prophet Muhammad did, for example, I won't belabor you too much on this. When Islam first started and the Prophet Muhammad was preaching about Islam, people threw camel dung on him, threw stones at him, ridiculed him, if anything. And what was his response? He prayed for them. He forgave them.
Alan, what's your authority here? Are you Muslim yourself?
I'm Muslim. I'm American Muslim, yes. I'm African-American Muslim.
Have you seen the cartoons? Have you looked?
I saw them.
And were you offended?
I was offended, and that was it. And I said, oh, my goodness, I'll pray for them. And that's it. I follow the character of the prophet. That's what he did.
What should Muslims do? What is the appropriate response, in your view, from Muslims?
Easy. They should continue, good-sounding, sensible Muslims to continue doing what they're supposed to be doing here in this country, in America, praying five times a day, taking care of their family, get along with people, being tolerant, and those who make these cartoons or say disparaging things, whether they want to destroy a Quran, whatever, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing.
Alan, do you fear that we're spiraling towards some kind of religious conflict here globally?
I think, if anything, it helps to sell certain books. It helps to sell that notion of the clash of civilization. It helps them feed on that type of frenzy. But no, because I've met individuals who are Christian who approached me and said, you know, I know Muslims are not like that. I speak to you and I speak to other Muslims here in this country. They're not like that.
I'm glad to hear that, and I hope that's where we go. But the firebombs and the burning embassies do not look good, and people dying. This is not a pretty picture, but we appreciate your call very much, Alan. I want to turn to London right now and Faisal Bodhi. He's news editor at the Islam Channel, an English language television channel focused on Islamic issues. He's former senior editor at AlJazeera.net. He's also written for The Guardian. Faisal Bodhi, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
We've heard from Adil Najam, Pakistani, with me in the studio, and from our caller just now, that this kind of violent reaction to these cartoons is wrong. What do you say?
Well, absolutely. You know, any kind of escalation at this point is not exactly what's needed. What's needed now is for sensible people, level-headed people, to try and defuse the row. But having said that, I can wholly understand the anger that's erupted in the Muslim world over these cartoons. And I think it's as much to do with a sense of invasion of, you know, the final private space that Muslims have got left, their sacred space, by Europe. I mean, they see their countries invaded by foreign forces. They see their culture dominated by Hollywood and Western movies and Western cultural products. Now the final sphere of privacy that they enjoy has been invaded sacrileged by the West.
Well, who invaded it? I mean, it was Danish imams that took these cartoons to Egypt, to Cairo, to the Middle East.
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, this row need not have erupted in the way that it has. It was you know, it was being tackled at a diplomatic level, at a very low profile level by certain embassies and together with the Danish government. And it was only when other publications around Europe decided to take up the cudgel, as it were, and assert this some kind of you know, secular militant secularism, that it sort of blew up in the way that it has.
Adil Najam, with me here in Boston, we read a couple of different things here. One, that you've got sort of secular governments in the Arab world who've been opposed to Islamic fundamentalism because it threatens their power, eager to identify themselves with this public anger because it asserts themselves as good, pious Muslims. On the other, that this is somehow maybe being used, ramped up by Islamic militants who want to bring on the clash of civilizations.
On the first thing, I think this is not about Islam, this is about Muslims. So you don't have to be an Orthodox Jew to be concerned about anti-Semitism. And you don't have to be an Islamic fundamentalist to be concerned about Islamophobia, so on the first point. But the second point, you're exactly right. The people who are happy here, I think people on both sides, who can use this to justify their deep-seated bigotry, if you will. You know, so if you are an Islamic extremist, this is heaven sent for you, because now you say to the rest of the Muslim world, the middle of the path Muslim world, see, we told you so. We told you that these guys are deep-seated, have deep-seated hatred against you. So you get evidence 101. If you are an extremist in the West who's been trying to prove that there's something fundamentally wrong with Islam, mm-hmm. and it's pathologically violent, mm-hmm. you say, see, we told you so. So that's why, you know, the spiraling is very, very disturbing. You know, the point made by David about this being a new level of geopolitical, you know South Asia well. Mm-hmm. The way the War of Independence, what the British called the mutiny, started was in another era of globalization, were these cartridges that were lined by beef and pig fat.
So Muslim soldiers were chewing the end off the cartridge and being fed pork,
Muslim
and they were
Hindu
outraged.
Soldiers said, we can't do this for religious reasons. Mm-hmm. The British army said, nonsense, they don't understand what this is. How pathetic. Mm-hmm. And what you ended up with was the end of the British East India Company.
And down it came. Faisal Bodhi, on the other hand, Europeans, we've heard them certainly at the beginning. They're more apologetic now as embassies burn. But they said, we have fundamental principles on the line here. We're beginning to feel hemmed in by Islamic principles that are not our own. Why should we sacrifice our fundamental principles to
I don't think we should see this as a dichotomy, as a clash of civilizations here, something, you know, between Islam and the West. The principle at stake here is the parameters of free speech. Where precisely do we draw the line? I find it quite ironic that the main effect of the publication of these cartoons has not been to instigate a debate about Muhammad, about Islam. It's been to curtail that debate. It's been to actually snuff it out. In fact, the reaction that you've seen, the violent reaction in the street, is the kind of debate that you're getting. So it seems to me, I mean, the people who argue that this is an expression of freedom of speech, or it's an assertion of the right to freedom of speech, I think are quite wrong. I think what we need here is a genuine debate about the parameters of free speech in a society where increasingly different groups with different values are coalescing. So we've got a situation now in Europe where we've got upwards of 20 million Muslims.
Yeah.
Scattered around, the majority of them in France, Britain and Germany. Now, it's also very telling that these cartoons have been published in a country which even Danish commentators and Danish experts, academics, have described as Islamophobic, where the Muslim...
Yeah, but you had Theo van Gogh, the Dutch filmmaker, murdered on the street in 2004. I mean, that would get your attention.
Well, no, that's one point. That's one element. We're talking about the reaction here to something that was profoundly offensive, and you know, no Muslim would condone even one of his own taking the law into his own hands like that. But the point is that there has to be a genuine debate in which Muslims are included. And Muslims are included in the debate about where we draw the lines of free speech. You know, what constitutes hate speech? What constitutes, you know, legitimate debate?
Clearly, something's needed. Lance is calling from Boston. Lance, you're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
We're well. Thanks, Lance.
Well, there's a couple of points that gentleman from Lebanon made that I think needs to be addressed. You know, he made a comment about what if cartoonists drew Christ as a child molester or Mary as a hooker?
Yep.
What would happen? And I think Christians wouldn't burn down embassies. I think there would be protests, legal. I think there would be a letter-writing campaign. I think in this country, particularly in the United States, we would contact our congressmen and our representatives, and there would be loud protests.
What if you had those cartoons plus Muslim soldiers all over Nebraska?
See, that's the point. That's the point that's well taken. I think this is more than just those 12 cartoons. I had the opportunity to look at them online, and I was... Well, I was stunned at their innocuousness, if you know what I mean.
You didn't see the hate speech? Adil Najam says this is hate. This is hate in drawn.
I understand his point of view, and I agree that if it was addressed, as that other gentleman said, if it were Christian, if it was Christ or Mary, yes, to us that would be a hate cartoon, and to him it's a hate cartoon. But people are dying. Embassies are being burned to the ground. People are rioting. There's more to this than those 12 cartoons.
Yeah, no kidding, and we can feel it. Lance, thank you for your call. I want to turn to New Haven, Connecticut, and Irshad Manji. She is author of The Trouble with Islam Today, A Muslim's Call for Reform in Her Faith. She's a visiting fellow in international security studies at Yale. Irshad, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
How do you interpret, how do you judge what's going on in the Muslim world in response to these cartoons?
Well, let me first say, Tom, like the other callers have said to you, this is a fascinating and very intelligent discussion you're having this morning. Congrats on that. Now, how I judge it is that I believe many Muslims are not living up to the best ideals that the Quran offers us. And the Quran, of course, is our holy book. For example, the Quran tells us, Tom, that there will always be non-believers and that it is up to God, not up to Muslims, to deal with them. The Quran even goes as far as to say, and I'm quoting now, there is no compulsion in religion. Well, this suggests that nobody should be forced to treat Islamic norms or traditions as if they are sacred. So that we actually are not just letting down, the West in our response when we riot and when we burn embassies and threaten people's lives. We're actually letting down our own holy book.
Faisal Bodhi, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Muslim world in flames over Danish cartoons. Dan is calling from Springfield, New York. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi. Springfield, New York.
Yes, Springville. Excuse me, Dan.
I just want to express my outrage by the Muslim behavior because, you see, if you write a book they don't like or you publish it, you put it on their hit list, you make a documentary film that they're offended by, they'll murder you, have a beauty contest in Nigeria that they don't like, and there's a riot. Cartoons they don't like, riot and kill. Call for jihad by the Muslim clergy seems to be all right, but if a Westerner uses the word crusade, all hell breaks loose. It doesn't seem as though they care about other religions. They destroy the Buddhist statue in Afghanistan, blow up Christian churches in the heartland where they live. They destroy non-Muslim religions in the areas they dominate, murder Western tourists in Egypt. And one of the things that really galls me, after they killed this Australian tourist in Bali, it was the Hindu population in the area that apologized. I think it's about time Muslims become more sensitive to non-Muslims.
An asymmetry of outrage here. Dan, we hear it. There's the bill of particulars, Adil Najam. What do you say to that?
I think all the things that he mentioned, I as a Muslim am offended by too. What I'm offended by, however, is his assertion that all Muslims are like that. Right? And that's where the media focus comes in. What we've done is that we've said, allowed sort of an image to be built up through these cartoons, through all sorts of things.
Yeah, but wait a minute, a bombing in Bali, hundreds did. That's not an image, that's a fact.
No, all of those are facts.
You know, Theo van Gogh in Denmark, he's dead in the street. He is murdered. Dan is right. Yeah,
all of those are fact, and all of those ought to be condemned by Muslims. So I'm agreeing with the fact that Muslims themselves ought to be speaking up against this thing. What I'm not agreeing with is that therefore we can say there's something wrong with Islam, there's something, which is what these cartoons are saying.
Can I jump in here?
Yes,
Tom?
Please, Irshad.
While I certainly appreciate that Adil has said that he agrees with the caller and that we Muslims ought to be speaking out against these things, the fact is we are not speaking out about them, and that is why the caller is upset, and I don't blame him. You know, we Muslims love to tell the world that Islam means peace, Islam is love, but the question is, what are we actually doing beyond merely chanting these words to show the world that we are not monolithic? And let's talk about these double standards for a second. You know, I find it galling, quite frankly, as a faithful Muslim, that we can so easily demand respect for our religion, but we have trouble showing respect for other religions. When, Adil, have we, protested the virulently anti-Semitic programming that routinely emanates from the Arab world, even during the holy month of Ramadan, meaning the month of fasting, which is supposed to be about introspection and self-criticism? And when have we protested Saudi Arabia's policy to prevent Jews and Christians from stepping on the soil of Mecca merely because they are Jews and Christians? It seems to me that as long as Rome welcomes non-Christians on its soil and Jerusalem welcomes non-Jews on its soil, we Muslims have a lot more to complain about than just these cartoons.
Adil?
I would not disagree. Yes, we should. But when the when in Afghanistan the Buddhist statues were decimated,
blown up by the Taliban,
they were protests against that in Pakistan. So let us also not forget that this is not monolithic.
The broad brush is very dangerous here, I grant you. But the things Irshad is pointing out are not just policies of fringe fundamentalists.
That's right.
Yes, we need to do more.
It's Saudi policy that non-Muslims can't be in Mecca.
And I hope what these cartoons also do is to bring that introspection into the Muslim world. I think part the Muslim intelligentsia in their response to these cartoons is also to be blamed. You read most editorials in the Muslim world and they go something like this. We don't like the violence, but we understand it. I, for one, do not understand it. I do not understand it on religious grounds. I do not understand it on strategic grounds. But nor do I understand the broad brush decimation of the image of an entire religion.
There's danger there for sure. Irshad, you say, you wrote in the Wall Street Journal this week, Arab elites love such controversies. Why? That's counterintuitive.
No, it's not counterintuitive if you're actually living in the Middle East, and I'll tell you why. Because these types of controversies provide very convenient opportunities to channel anger away from local injustices. And so, as I wrote in the Wall Street Journal, it is not surprising that the very president of Lebanon would say that his country cannot accept any insult to any religion. Well, that's rich, I pointed out, because since the late 1970s, it is in fact the Lebanese government that has licensed the Hezbollah-run television satellite channel called Al Manar, which is one of the world's most viciously anti-Semitic broadcasters. And again, I point this out because we Muslims have not been pouring into the streets to protest that.
Dave is calling from Stowe, Massachusetts. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much for taking my call. This is a great discussion, and there's about a million points I'd like to make, but the important one to me is the issue is fundamentalism rather than Muslim versus Christianity to me. And I would say a couple things. I think fundamentalism tends to flourish in when there's a lack of education, lack of enlightenment. And secondly, the view that I think most Americans have, we put the word Islamic, Muslim, and fundamentalism. Muslim and fundamentalism go together for most Americans.
But you've heard what Irshad is saying. You know what? There's not enough mainstream Muslim self-critique here or opposition to the violence that we've seen.
Well,
do you agree or not?
I guess I would agree about that. I also wonder if there is mainstream Muslim critique of the violence. It may not be being heard, perhaps. It isn't. It's not nearly as catchy. I mean, there's the whole issue of what the media covers.
Of course. Absolutely. Let us look at it. Irshad, let me ask you. I'm looking here at an essay that Tariq Ramadan wrote in the last couple of days here, Free Speech and Civic Responsibility. And, of course, he is the, what I guess, Egyptian origin scholar, I think living in Switzerland now, refused entry to the United States, but very respected, very influential in Europe. He says, both sides are really making a mistake here, that the place is publishing these cartoons is a very stupid way to address freedom of speech. He says that the violent pushback is dumb as well. He says, now it is a power struggle. Who will have the final word? Who is right? Who will have the upper hand? What do we want, to polarize our world or build bridges? I mean, it has this horrible feeling that that's the dynamic we're sliding into, Irshad.
Well, Tom, I've spent a lot of time in Europe. In fact, I was there in November and December of 2005 to film a documentary about Islam. And one of the things that struck me is the intimidation and the fear that both Muslims and non-Muslims have about talking about this gulf between their respective cultures. In other words, people are steeped in denial about the fact that there is indeed a chasm between them. And so what I think the Danish newspaper was trying to do is actually open up the debate. To be sure, because of what the Danish imams did in taking...
I'm not sure that they were trying to do that. You don't try to do that by saying, please go and make me, draw me cartoons that are going to offend people. Let's see how much we can offend them.
Adil is temperate but offended here, Irshad.
If I can just finish my point. What happened, as you pointed out, Tom, was that these Danish imams took these caricatures to the Middle East to sow the seeds of unrest, and they got exactly what they wanted.
But it's a global information world. Once they're published, they're global. Yes, they pushed them. They blew on the flames here, but they're on the web.
And they might have added, but between September and December, there was an effort
for dialogue. One second, Irshad. I'm sorry. Adil, please.
Yeah, but between September and December, there was this window when there was an attempt at dialogue. There were these ambassadors who go to the prime minister and want to talk. All they want to do is to talk. At that point, it could have turned out differently. It could have turned out after the meeting, the prime minister comes and says, freedom of expression is a fundamental right. We cannot compromise on that. But hate speech is not to be tolerated.
You said earlier you think this is a mistake in terms of geostrategy. But somebody appears to like this. Now, maybe it's just individual governments, as Irshad says, but does this play into the Al-Qaeda game plan?
Sure. If you are the communication strategy director of Al-Qaeda, if there is one, wow, thank you very much, Danish cartoonists.
Is this going to drive more Muslims?
No, thank you very much, Danish imams. That's the point.
And them too.
They're the ones who sowed the seeds of unrest, because as you rightly pointed out, my friend, there was, in fact, the beginnings of a dialogue.
The imams could not have done this without the cartoons. I mean, sure, the point is, without the cartoons, would they have been able to do that? No, there was something there. There was smoke and there was fire.
Let me get a call here. Donnie's calling from Panama City, Florida. Hi, Donnie, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say that obviously here in the world today, under the Christian, the anti-Semitism that's done, both in the program, and I think the other lady had spoken to that earlier, that we as thought leaders, be it in the Christian community, the religious leaders, come out and downplay that and say this is not the norm, we shouldn't accept this. I think that the Muslim community to help through this should have thought leaders and clerics to come out that are on the moderate, not at the extreme, to be able to say this is not what the Quran preaches, this is not the way we carry ourselves, we should, you know, stand down and practice what we are preaching and learning through the Quran. I think that would be more impactful to the Muslim community.
Donnie, what did you think when you heard President Bush at the top of his State of the Union address within just a few seconds come out saying we're at war with fundamentalist Islam? Do you see that as accurate? Do you see it as inflammatory? How do you think you'd hear that if you were a mainstream Muslim?
Definitely inflammatory. I have many friends, both Christians and Muslims, that are good people that should practice. I think we need to hear more of that. The sensationalism that we live in the media, it seems to inflate all the negativisms of a lot of the aspects of religion. And I think the only way that we can calm this is to be able to get the clerics, to get the thought leaders and religious leaders to come together to say we need even a summit would even help in that aspect.
That is a great suggestion. It feels to me like it's high time for that, and I'd love to see that proposed from the Muslim side or Christian or you name it. Donnie, thank you for your call. Kishore is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Kishore, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for having me. My point is actually a corollary to Donnie's, in that I think the problem here is not one of the masses, but one of the leadership, both on the newspaper side for printing the cartoon and the leaders on the Muslim side for allowing this violence to happen. Sort of taking a page out of the book from Gandhi, this would have been a perfect situation to have nonviolent protests if they wanted in their particular countries, against their particular embassies. I think it would have proven a huge point. But right now, I don't feel that type of leadership exists in the Muslim community to be able to get the people out there in a nonviolent way. And if it does exist, I don't know where it is. And it would be great to see it right now.
I couldn't agree more. Kishore, thanks for calling. Adil, what about it? We don't even really think of nonviolent protest emerging here. Why not?
And that's the pity, and Irshad is right. There is not enough mainstream introspection within the Muslim world. Now, that does not justify cartoons like this. But there's also not enough mainstream introspection, I think, in the West about its relationship with Islam, too. I think the challenge is much greater for the Muslim world and Muslim intellectuals. I think those in the Muslim world who are silent need to stand up and say, we do not stand for this violence.
You know what the great tragedy
And same
here
on the
is.
West. Mm-hmm. Stand up and say, we do not stand for hate.
Irshad?
Tom, the great tragedy here is, and I believe it was Adil who actually pointed this out earlier, that immediately after these cartoons appeared in Denmark in September 2005, there was, in fact, the beginning of a dialogue happening between the Muslim and non-Muslim communities. And so, in fact, we did see some non-violent protests and, diplomatic letters exchanged back and forth between the government of Denmark and ambassadors from 10 Muslim countries. And as I say, it was only after these cartoons were brought to the...
But the Danish Prime Minister refused to meet with these ambassadors over this.
What he did, however, was say...
And maybe rightly, he said, it's not my business, we have a free press.
He said that he was saddened by these cartoons, but that in a free society...
He said that much later. He said that in January.
Media does operate independent of government, and what these ambassadors wanted him to do was somehow punish the newspaper, and he pointed out that he doesn't have the power to do that.
Irshad, let me ask you. You're prepared to be both a devout Muslim and pretty critical of your own religion here. What about
That's
in the United
States? Part of my devotion to it.
I understand it. I understand that very well. I appreciate that. But what about in the United States? These have been very little published here. The Philadelphia Inquirer did it. Lots of blogs have them up. I mean, Google it. You find it in an instant.
Right.
But on the published side, not there. Is that the right step? Is that showing respect to Islam? Is that kowtowing to a kind of tyranny? How do you see it?
Well, I actually said this to one of the journalists at the Philadelphia Inquirer yesterday, just in a private note, which I will now make public, which is that motive and context matters. And the fact that the Philly Inquirer published these cartoons with the motive of wanting their readers to understand what the furor is about made it a legitimate decision. You see, in Islam, intention counts for a lot. It's called niyat. And if your intention is right and sound, then the actions that follow will be right and sound. And so in a case like this, I think it was fine because there wasn't malice involved. If there is malice involved, then obviously I disagree with the decision to run them.
Adil, how do we get out of a spiral toward greater cultural clash and be just as brass tacks as you can be here? Because, just the idea of singing Kumbaya is not enough, clearly.
I think the one of the callers had at least part of it bit right. Let's all first read Gandhi. As a Pakistani, saying that is something in
South
itself.
South Asia speaks.
But I think getting meetings of leadership, and not just Islamic leadership. I stress again, this is not just about Islam. This is about Muslims. Let's get a leadership of Muslim political leaders and European political leaders together to come and say out that this is not to be condoned, neither the cartoons nor the violence. Let's get meetings of intellectuals. There are too many people. I think the key lies not with those who are speaking, because they will speak the hate talk that they are already speaking. The key lies with those who are silent. Martin Luther King had it right. We shall be condemned by history, not by the bad that the bad do, but the good that the good do not do.
Irshad Manji, what's your prescription here? We've got a problem.
Yeah, we do have a problem, but I'm happy to report to you, Tom, that in the last several days, my email inbox has been flooded with messages from young Muslims, not just in North America and Europe, but also in places such as India and Indonesia, saying that while they're offended by the cartoons, they're even more offended by the violence that has taken place in the name of Islam over these cartoons. And what they're saying is that the so-called leadership of Islam today ought to be looking to a new generation of Muslims who are both interested and capable of reconciling free expression with religious belief.
It's a small planet. We've got to share it, and it looks like it's time to get busy on that project. Irshad Manji, visiting fellow at Yale, thanks very much for being with us this
Pleasure.
Hour. And Adil Najam of the Fletcher School at Tufts University. Adil, always great to be with you. Thanks
My
for coming in.
Always.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation or download the On Point podcast or subscribe to our daily newsletter all at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.